Well, welcome one and all, friends, colleagues, generous donors. That covers everyone. Welcome everyone to the inauguration of the Wayne Rosing Simon and Diana Rabb Chair in Theoretical Physics. This is a wonderful occasion of which we have had some, not enough, but it's always just a wonderfully joyous occasion. We're here, of course, to celebrate two wonderful donors, three in this case, who have collaborated to endow a chair for one of our permanent members. And aside from honoring and thanking them, our main purpose is to honor the first occupant of that chair, Lars Bilston, who is here with a very extended family, and we welcome them to the KITP in particular. We're also going to be treated after a bunch of speeches like this to a true treat, a lecture on the biggest explosions that have ever occurred in the universe since the Big Bang. And then, to end the occasion, we'll have a reception in our courtyard out in the middle of the building. So I'm going to start off by turning over the mic to our Chancellor, Henry Yang, who has done so much, as you all know, for UCSB, but I can tell you that he's done even more for the KITP. He is the best chancellor one could imagine, loyal, supportive, and a great friend. We all know that he's been shepherding the campus through extremely hard times and with great leadership, and need I say more? Henry.
Well, David, thank you. The words from you is such a comfort to me. I'm very grateful. We're all here to celebrate the inauguration of Wayne Rosing and Simon and Diana Rabb Chair in Theoretical Physics. Of course, in honor of Dorothy, Wayne, Simon, and Diana, for your vision, for your philanthropy, for your generosity. I think endowed chair is such an important gift to a university. It helps us recruit new faculty, retain our best faculty, especially during the last year. All we were working was because we could not recruit new faculty, all we did was just retention. And at that time, I had a wish we have a few more endowed chairs. We could keep all the best faculty here. And they also can use endowed chair to inspire younger faculties. So younger faculty member would see how to work on their career in the future. There's many inspirations for students. And it is on and on. There's so many benefit. First, I would like to tell you that your investment for KITP is that you made the right choice. I will tell you why KITP. KITP, I just have this little table here. I'll just share with you. This is a National Academy proceedings. It's published by National Academy. It says, UC Santa Barbara's Kavli Institute for Theoretical Physics ranked the highest impact national research facility for science impact on non-biomedical research. So we don't count the biomedical research. Here, KITP ranks number one. And astronomy department of our sister institution up in the Bay Area, which you're very familiar with, ranks number two. And NOAO number three, and so on and so forth. But the significance about this chart compares KITP with other National Science Foundation facilities. In the study, KITP also ranked highest in impact than the highest impact universities, such as Harvard universities, with a score 6.15, and our score is 6.56. Then DOE National Laboratories, such as Stanford's Linear Accelerator Laboratories, the score is 5.65. Again, all is 6.56. Then NASA centers such as Goddard Space Center, the score is 4.35. Again, our score is 6.56, the highest score. So you really made the right choice to name this endowed chair in theoretical physics. For that, congratulations. And I also want to take this opportunity to thank Fred Kavli in his absence. So Fred is a visionary, and he has established so far 15 Kavli Institutes around the world. And also now even the Royal Society in London is called Kavli Royal Society Research Center. There's a new place. So but I must say that KITP is the first institute he has ever established. All the standard, the methodology, and everything is following the exemplary model set up by UC Santa Barbara's KITP, and with David's leadership from the very beginning. And also, I want to say a little bit something about our physics department. Recently, the National Research Council came up with the review of the 10 years. The last report came up in 1995 for the past 10 years. Now, because this is nonprofit, it's not for profit. Now, you know, there's so many for-profit rankings. There's even a journal called Ranking of the Universities. But this is the nonprofit, and This report ranked the university assessed the university based on the last 5 years, and for our physics department, they have two kind of rankings. One is called R, another called S. They have 100 criteria for each with weighting functions. It's so complex. It's led by a Princeton astronomer. So I guess his purpose won't make you to be confused. But with that, our R category, our physics department ranked number 5 in the country, and in S category, ranked the number 6 in the country. With that expression of all of about how great our KITP and our physics department is, now I want to say something about how great our donors are. And by the way, it's our campus practice whenever we have a Nobel laureates in the in the audience, we always acknowledge them. David is already acknowledged. Then we have also Alan Heger right there. May I acknowledge you, Alan? And Wayne is a visionary pioneer, and of course, a computer giant. Computing scientist, engineer, and giant. I remember the first time when I was on an airplane, I sat next to Wayne. I actually did not know him, but he knew me. So you asked me a few questions, and I thought it was pretty direct and pretty deep. I did not know. Later on, I found out that all makes sense. We all know about this Las Combras Observatory, Global Telescope Network around the world. I remember one day Dylan and I had the honor to celebrate a Sedgwick Reserve Nell Byrne Observatory. And after the celebration, we find a chance to have a dinner with Wayne and Dorothy. And that night, I really found out something. I did not know that you know so much about astronomy. Lars has talked me into changing my academic field to astronomy. So I've done that for a couple of years, spent a lot of time in this field. Then I realized that Wayne, you really know so much. We were talking about decadal survey, which I spent a lot of energy reading that, tried to argue for the TMT, for the 30 meter telescope. But you mentioned about LSST, you knew all about it. So that was just amazing, your knowledge. So I wanted to especially acknowledge that he's the best astronomer. Yeah, and I also want to take this opportunity to acknowledge Simon, and you are wonderful because we all know about your reputation as the chairman and co-founder of Faro Technologies. And you were the pioneer of computer-aided measurement technologies. And also your pioneering development of CAM2, CAM2 system, that you hold 50 patents in the field of industrial measurement and biomaterials and medical diagnostics. So your contribution is so great. We're just very, very honored just by your recognizing us and supporting us. And of course, I also want to take this opportunity to acknowledge Diana. You are an innovative artist, and you manipulate light with giant aluminum canvas. Oh, that's you. Sorry. But when you do that, I want to ask you, when you do that, that's a contrast to your measurement, isn't it? Because when you do measurement, it has to be very precision. That's high precision. But when you do this artist, precision doesn't matter. How could you do both at the same time? Well, Diana, I heard about you. You're being a celebrated author, and you teach us at UCLA writing program, and also you lecture at all the writing workshops all around the world, and also you lecture at our Santa Barbara Writers Conference, and now we have the Robb Prize at KITP. It provides opportunities for high school teachers to have an opportunity to interact with our renowned, famous, knowledgeable scientists and scholars. Also, the award-winning presentation now available to widespread use. So we want to acknowledge and thank you for that. Now come to Lars. Lars, I guess everybody knows about your tremendous accomplishments in astronomy. And Lars actually has been my teacher for 5 years now about astronomy. And I really enjoyed it. I enjoy spending that time working with you. And I remember the first time when you accepted the offer to come to UC Santa Barbara. You were the only new faculty we recruited that I got a call from your previous campus's chancellor, just not happy, express his displeasure to me. That was a phone call I would remember forever. But that phone call was the best recommendation letter we can ever get. And with that note, David, you are going to talk about our endowed chair holder. And David, it is my honor, of course, to turn the podium back to David. I must say, under all this accolade accomplishment about the KITP, and also to large extent the success of our physics department, we are very, very grateful for the visionary and able and scholarly leadership provided by David, and also the support, you know, from your beautiful wife, Jackie here. Thank you.
Thanks, Henry. So what we're now what we're going to do is talk about our very generous donors, the Rosings, Wayne, and Dorothy, unfortunately, isn't here, and Diana and Simon. I'm going to introduce Wayne, who will introduce the Robbs, who will, and then we have a present for them. Wayne, this is by the way, a wonderful chair, a collaborative chair, and works in a way the way science works nowadays. Often the best achievements are when different people and different groups pitch together to do something that is greater than their individual efforts. I want to say a word about Wayne Rosing, who is new to Santa Barbara. He's only been here 5 years. Maybe that makes you an old timer by now. But Wayne is a truly remarkable individual. I did, of course, in preparing for my introduction of Wayne, a little bit of research. And his career is absolutely remarkable. He's a techno-Renaissance man. If there's a hall of fame in the computer web IT world, which I doubt if there is yet, but if there is, Wayne will occupy a honored niche. Wayne started as an astronomer. As a kid, he built telescopes, and then his love of the sky led him into astronomy, into math and physics. But then somehow he ended up in computer science, obviously because he was simply so talented and foreseeing that he got involved very early stage, back in the days of DEC and Data General. He then went to work for Apple and was instrumental in Apple developing Liza. And those of you who have old memories of the early days of computing, which is only 30 years ago, Liza was the precursor to the Mac, to the first personal computer. And he then went on to another famous computer company, Sun Microsystems, where he launched the Spark workstations. These seem like things from the totally ancient past, but they're only 25 years ago. And then he went to Sun Labs, where he headed up the effort to create Java. Now, those of you who don't know, Java is like the first language for the web. It still is in use. It's changed a bit, I imagine. But that's the first web programming language. And then to complete this amazing career, he went to work for Google in its early days, where he was senior vice president for engineering, software engineering. And you know what Google has done to the world of software. I suppose after all of those achievements, he felt he couldn't do more. It's hard to imagine surpassing that record. He left the Google in 2005 and decided to devote himself to his first and clearly his most deepest love, that of astronomy, at where he's played a bunch of very important roles, involvement in the LSST, but most important for us here in Santa Barbara, and perhaps for the world of astronomy, is the founding of the Las Combras Observatory, and which is still in the process of growing to ultimately something like, and I couldn't get the figure right, every place I looked, it looked larger and larger, 50, 70, 80 telescopes around the world in 6 or 7 stations located just about anywhere around, well, everywhere around the globe, so that any object in the whole sky is visible to at least one of these telescopes. The motto of LCOGT is, "We keep you in the dark." So this is an incredible achievement, which has been led, and you know, in the sense of providing the endowment, but also getting into the workshops and building the telescopes with his own hands. Wayne loves to build telescopes, and it's only been around now for 2 years, but it's up and going. They've already discovered planets. They've discovered, let's see, the binary, that was not there, right? But, and other, so what's really good about this telescope is that you can move these things from afar. You can treat all of these dozens of telescopes as part of one big telescope, if you want, that is globally distributed. And if something happens in the sky, that one of these telescopes happens to observe, let's say a supernova, for example, you can immediately start tracking it and following it in real time and catch whatever. You don't have to wait for months and months for some committee to approve your time on a space telescope or Keck or one of those. You're quite flexible. And that is a new area of astronomy that Wayne wisely chose, where there's not that much competition from the big guys. And so you can discover, who knows, lots of supernova, gamma ray bursts, new planets in other solar systems, and even things that nobody has anticipated. So it's very exciting, and Santa Barbara was extremely lucky that Wayne decided to locate that facility here. And since we've heard about it, especially since Lars has heard about it, we've taken advantage of that to the benefit of both LCOGT and, of course, UCSB. So this has been of enormous value to Santa Barbara astrophysics community, has boosted our capabilities, and we've had enormous and growing and deepening scientific collaboration between this privately financed LCOGT and the University of California. It has been a delight to know and to admire Wayne's activities over the last few years, and it's unbelievably appropriate that he is one of the donors of this chair in astrophysics, and it's unbelievably appropriate that the first recipient of this chair is Lars Bilston, who has worked so closely with Wayne, and this chair is a great sign of their continuing collaboration. So with no further ado, I'm going to introduce Wayne Rosing, who will make a few personal remarks, and he will introduce Simon and Diana.
Thank you, David. I think after that introduction, I'm just going to retire. Let's see. I'm going to try to keep this very, very simple. You don't get very many opportunities in your life to recognize someone this way. I met Lars approximately in September, maybe perhaps late August of 2005, in a meeting over somewhere having to do with computer science, and he was there, and he was kind of this astronomer person, and we sort of chatted, and I said, I'm working on this observatory, blah, 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 why don't we get together? And the next thing that happened was I was in Lars's office on a Saturday morning after working out in my gym clothes and sweaty T-shirt. That's what I tend to wear most of the time anyhow. And I think we chatted for 5 hours or something like that. And he told me what, or asked me what I was doing, and I sort of expanded on it. And somewhere in there I noticed there's this sort of infectious interest that I was sensing from Lars. And this led to a lot of stuff almost immediately. Before we knew it, we had access to the real estate people here, and we were able to sublease a part of the UCSB engineering space over on near Los Carneros and Hollister. Then before we knew it, we had an agreement with Mark in the physics department about how we could cooperate together, and although we're not a part of UCSB, we're kind of like, I guess we're like staff members or something. It's a very expensive way to get a parking permit, I might add. The next thing we know, we plan to hire some astronomers, some world-renowned astronomers, and they become adjunct professors in the physics department. And the next thing we know, we're hiring postdocs, and they have this kind of funny dual appointment. They're UCSB postdocs, but they're also LCO research fellows, and all of a sudden we're up and running with an actual durable scientific institution, not just a project. And I had the idea, I suppose, but it was connecting with Lars that extraordinarily changed the vision of what we could accomplish. And it's probably cut the time to get there in terms of being able to establish LCO by factors of two or three, because the scientific side is not something you can snap your fingers and make happen. Engineering is ultimately a matter of plan execution, but building a science team takes work, and so to a large extent what LCO is accomplishing is in no small matter Lars's effort. That was one, as the joke goes. Then the second thing I noticed was we decided we wanted to have a place where we could have a telescope in the dark, where we could do testing. And I mentioned that to Lars, and I told him that I had been out to this place called Sedgwick Reserve and had met the director out there, and there just seemed to be some interest. Okay. Within weeks, we were back out there. We had the spot. We had the negotiation with the campus. We had met with the building people. Lars did all the fencing, which with whatever committee it was on campus that sort of is in charge out there or says what can be done or not. And so, and I would say in 6 weeks from sort of really getting this thing going, we're like, okay, now we have an observatory to build. That was two. And then the next thing that happened was Erica, Lars' daughter, was over Dos Pueblos in the engineering program over there. And Lars sort of dragged me over, not unwillingly, but you know, I got a lot to do. And all of a sudden, I found the Dos Pueblos engineering program. And Lars was very involved in that, and I thought that was really neat. And so that's about point one more. And then we started working with the Museum of Natural History and tried to get LCO involved with them and develop more of a community outreach. And Lars was very, very helpful in getting that project established. We're still getting it established because they're busy raising bazillion dollars to rebuild the place. So they're not quite sure about how much emphasis they're going to put right now on what we want to do with them, but eventually it will happen when they get their setup going. So that's another point one. And then the last thing is Lars told me one day about the Dos Pueblos Engineering Academy. They're going to raise some money. They want to build a building. They want to turn this thing from a small thing into a real live major, in my opinion, world-class program. And he sort of said, Wayne, can you give us some money and I'm gonna start a blah, blah, blah. I met Sandy Seal and all that, and we put some money down to help get it going. And I thought, well, it'd be interesting to see how this goes. And I sort of quietly watched. Well, Lars and Sandy and everybody just worked hard. And the next thing I know, you know, they're within this much of their goal. And of course, he sort of grabs me by the arm a little bit. And so we helped out again. And so what do I want to recognize? What I'm really recognizing is the social side of this theorist. The physicist, he's a theorist. He drops pi out of things. The speed of light c is just a unit, you know. I mean, you can't do that in engineering. I mean, our telescope would be this big if we dropped out things like that. But theorists have a way of thinking about the world. And what I think is extraordinary is this particular theorist is, you know, a great father, a great husband, a superb friend, and an extraordinary contributor to bringing science, bringing technology out into the community, and for just doing stuff that really, I think, brings science out in front of people. And to say it mildly. We live in a time when that's not as happening as much as it should, although in this community, we probably don't see the world that way. But in the rest of the world, it's really an important thing that this is happening. So that's what I'd like to recognize more than anything else. And with just energy, this guy gets amazing things done. So now he'll have a stipend so he can hopefully get a lot more done. So those are my remarks. I couldn't possibly do justice to David's introduction, to emulate David's introduction of Simon and Diana. But I just, I met Simon as we were discussing putting this thing together. We had a meeting over at LCO. I felt like I had known this man my whole life. So maybe, I don't know, resonant particles or something like that. We had a little chat about this, and I think we both shared our enthusiasm for Lars. So without much more ado, Simon, Diana, if you have anything you'd like to say.
Thanks, Wayne. That was very kind. So I'm here on behalf of myself and Diana, and I thought, gee, what's missing in all this? I thought perhaps I would touch on the spiritual side. I know I was a scientist, an engineer, and a businessman. Now I'm an artiste, so as Henry kindly pointed out, working with a light still. Diana's a writer and a poet, so she's about all those spiritual things as well. And at rare moments, I've been known to call her Spacey as well, so perhaps astronomy and astrophysics are appropriate. So, you know, it's interesting. I don't know where my interest really started. I know it was the early books by Jules Verne or the Tom Swift, you know, science fiction series, or maybe because I was a Trekkie, or maybe it was because things like organized religion and false knowledge, without offense to anybody here, had resulted in much pain in my family's history. So we seek out spiritualism where we can. And for me, astronomy and astrophysics represent that which is greater than what we are. It's that which provides us a degree of humility, a degree of humbleness. It's an odd contrast about astrophysics and astronomy, because it does two completely opposite things at the exact same time. It makes you feel incredibly small and insignificant, but at the same time, it provides you the one single reason why you can actually feel your greatness. Because if you look out into that big space and you ask yourself, what other self-viewed creatures could be examining their world like we do, and asking the kinds of questions that Lars asks. That's an honor, and that's a privilege for humanity. So we get humility, as well as we get the one honor that we can have. Now my story is not dissimilar to Wayne's, is the incredible power of Lars Bildsten, which probably will be a book one day. my tie is E is equal to MC squared. You mentioned energy, and you mentioned he had energy, and he moves mass with his energy. He is mass, he is energy, he's all those things. He's probably a supernova about to explode. I don't know, what else are you going to do? It's an extraordinary thing. The passage, he's kind of like this, he's kind of dark energy, like you're being attracted to it, but you don't know what. It's not magnetic, it's not electromagnetic. You know it keeps the galaxies together, but you don't know quite what it is. And you just feel like you're being pulled into it. I don't think it's a vortice, it's not a black hole, it's nothing negative, you know? It's just like, you feel like you're headed, I don't know, to heaven or something, you know? So he has, and I was seeking places to kind of emphasize my, use the whatever wealth came out of the company I started in a productive way. And, you know, it's kind of, I'm going with the flow here, and Lars appears, and then Wayne appears, and then unspoken heroes like Sarah Vaughan appear and provide an environment where these things can come together. And so when I met these individuals and I was motivated by the sheer energy and what they did, and since I felt this spiritual attachment to that, it became a very natural thing for me to be involved. Just a final word. Diana and I were in Italy just recently. I had an art show in Lucca, and the town of Lucca is probably never had more than 7,000 or 8,000 people in it at any given time, but it has 100 churches. And that's probably not unusual for Europe. I know Prague has 400 churches. A lot of them have been, it's not decommissioned, deconsecrated to be everything from art halls to theaters. And I asked, I said, how can it be that so much energy is put into building these churches? I mean, how can it be? And it was explained to me that actually it's about wealthy families of the time. And what you did back then is when you had a little extra money, you didn't know what to do with, and you were looking for a way to heaven and a way to make Joan's besides church look smaller than yours, you would build a bigger church and make it a little bit fancier, and somehow you would ensure both your reputation in town and your right to get to heaven. And I thought, and then when you go through Europe and you see the amazing number of churches, you get this, I mean, for me it was kind of an amazement first, and then it was kind of like, oh my God, like so much time and energy been spent making churches. So what do we do today? Today, I'm thinking, you know, I'm not going to build a church, right? We got Wayne, he's building, with a little extra cash he's got, he's building, you know, telescopes for the world. I mean, it's an amazing thing. So the way I envisage what I did today is that, and what Diana and I did today, is that we put one brick in the edifice, the church of knowledge, that which humanity is now expending appropriately its energy to bring together knowledge, to expand our understanding of who we are. And that is truly a religious experience. So thank you, Lars, and congratulations.
Okay. Now I am going to introduce Lars the scientist, but before we do that, we're going to have a presentation of the chairs. So Lars, no chair needed. Simon and Diana, and Wayne, and Henry. We have three chairs for. Let's see. The first chair is for Lars himself, and it reads. Lars Bilston, the way Moses finding in one of that person. And I have one of these that was given by Fred Block. Fred, is Fred enjoying it? And we, by the way, have another one at the KFPB. Laura Schrein and I could buy one of these, very comfortable, which was donated by Jessica Lucy. We should honor him. It's a pity that Fred and Linda aren't here. I also wanted to honor Someone else who isn't here, that's Fred Kavli. Of course, as the Chancellor said, Fred has been very generous to the KITP, but what you might not know is that he has put at our disposal a matching fund. And in fact, these chairs are matched with an equal amount from Fred Kavli. And for those of you who enjoy this experience and think it is marvelous and wish to emulate the generosity and vision of Wayne and Simon and Diana, I'd like you to know that there is still quite a bit of money left in that matching fund. So you too can have a chair. Now let me say a word about Lars the scientist. So when I came to Santa Barbara, one of my goals was to boost the activity in astrophysics and astronomy here at the KITP to the same level that the other fields such as condensed matter physics or high energy physics or string theory had at the time. And shortly after that, we in fact searched for a visionary, excellent young theorist who could lead that effort. Lars was not necessarily the obvious choice. He wasn't then as famous as he is today. He was very well known. He was especially in Berkeley, as Henry remarked. He had won a prize that is given, the Helen B. Warner Prize, that's given to the most promising young astrophysicist, but he was quite young, and but I knew he was the man as the first time I met him. As Simon remarked very eloquently, you don't have to spend much time with Lars to get a feeling about what he's capable of and what and his qualities, and your first impression, which comes quickly, is, I can tell you, absolutely correct. I regard Lars's appointment here as one of my greatest achievements to the KITP. He certainly has lived up to every hope that I had in every possible way. I didn't really expect to have somebody who would be as helpful in non-scientific activities as Lars has turned out to be, such as building this, the extension to the building, where the building committee consisted of me and Lars. And of course, we had access to Ellen indirectly through Lars. And the new building, extension to the building, which is so beautiful and so successful, is largely due to Lars's efforts, maybe Ellen too, indirectly. So Lars, in the non-scientific part of his contribution to the KITP, has been of enormous help to me. One of the people I immediately turn to whenever I have the problem, and when he can, he delivers. But I want to say a word about his science. Lars, you know, astrophysics has become much more of a theoretical science in the last century, last 50 years, last 20 years. It's divided up into different kinds of astrophysicists. There are sort of the purists who do cosmology, study the fundamental history of the universe, a very clean subject. People in high energy physics like me like it very much. And then there are people who deal with really complicated stuff like magnetohydrodynamic plasmas, all sorts of. Lars, in a sense, focuses on the core of astronomy, because, you know, much of what we see around us in the universe is made up out of compact objects, stars mostly. And what Lars, as far as I could tell, the center of his scientific interests are these round things that make up most of the universe that we see. be it stars or when they burn out of fuel and collapse, neutron stars or white dwarfs, or explosions that end up as very visible objects that we will hear about today. That's what he concentrates on. And this is, in a sense, the core of astronomy, which started by looking at the stars, and its first theoretical triumphs were understanding how stars burnt. And it still is, in a sense, the core of astrophysics. But it's an area of astrophysics that requires an immense amount of knowledge about all different kinds of areas of physics. And if I thought a bit yesterday when I was preparing these remarks, you know, what attracted me to Lars as a scientist? And that was, I guess, just this, that fact that because he was interested in those objects and their strange properties, sometimes strange properties, neutron stars, exploding supernova, that the astronomers, astrophysicists, the theorists who work in that field are required to know a lot of different kinds of physics. So that Lars was an astrophysicist with an accent on physics. And the more I got to know Lars, the more I realized that that is true. He is the kind of physicist who knows a lot of different kinds of physics, which is what you need to understand the properties of these compact objects. And of course, that is exactly the kind of person I was looking for to head this activity at the KITP, where we bring together physicists from of all sorts and mix them together. And so the breadth of his interests was apparent to me, and I've seen it ever since. Lars is indeed a widely recognized leader in the field of compact objects, and his study of compact objects seems to grow. It started out with neutron stars and white dwarfs, and now has expanded to supernova. Not sure there are any other compact objects around that he hasn't made major contributions to the study of, except maybe planets. He's done some work on planets, I think, but not maybe he'll do more. Are there any other compact objects? Black holes. He hasn't done too much work on what happens inside black holes, but that's because you can't see inside black holes, so that's left for string theorists to discuss. Well, I think we have all had our say, and we've honored everyone. And now let's turn to the birthday boy himself for a talk on the biggest bang, or the biggest explosions, or exploding stars. Lars.